Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, October 21st, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford and voice-activated Sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. And by Slingbox. Watch your favorite TV shows when you're away from home with Slingbox. Check out Slingbox at a Best Buy near you or visit Slingbox.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
I'm Scott Johnson.
And this is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day along with you, try to make sense of it all. Becky Worley out. Dr. Kiki out. Jason Howell out. Everybody out.
Everybody doing the show.
Oh, wait. No, thank goodness. Scott and Ayaz are here to help me out.
We're happy to be here. Excited to talk about tech news. I don't know if anyone knew this about me, but yesterday I suffered an entire day without any kind of internet connection at all. So today I'm doing as many things on the internet as I can, and one of them just happened to be coming on TNT.
That's right. And we're gonna continue pushing your internet connection tomorrow, because Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, we'll be doing a live broadcast covering the opening keynote from BlizzCon.
Oh, yes, that's correct. You and I will talk about the keynote. We'll talk about the big announcements. We're going to hang around for a panel or so, see what is happening in Anaheim this week with one of the biggest gaming conventions on the planet. Certainly one of the biggest run by the company who is doing it, which is Blizzard Entertainment. I'm very excited about it. So a joint effort between The Instance and Tom Merritt Esquire and TWiT. We'll be doing some really cool stuff. Can't wait.
Of course, starting out with the tech news today, thousands of Germans are celebrating Opt-Outerfest. This is the Google Street View opt-out situation. You can go online and say, no, Google, I would not like you to take a picture of my house, even though you're on a public street. And so please blur it out. The German government required Google to do this. Just shy of 250,000 Germans have told Google to blur pictures of their homes on the street. Now, you can spin that number a couple different ways, can't you, IS?
Yeah, it sounds like 200,000 people or 250,000, but it's like 2% of all the houses that were photographed. So, I mean, there's two different stories we've actually looked at for this, and one makes it look like it's a horrendous deal for Google, but it's really not that big a deal. I mean, talking about 2% of the population has filed a request to have their homes blurred, and one of the downsides is that Google says they can't do that for everybody because, well, they just can't make out some addresses on their Street View shots, and some of these descriptions weren't exactly descriptive.
Yeah, you didn't have to do it online. I guess you could just scrawl a postcard to them, and they can't read your handwriting. They can't blur your house.
Oh, that's such a problem. You know, I mean, go ahead.
I was just going to say I understand, okay, now we know it's a small percentage and it's not really that big of a deal. But it's a bigger deal than anywhere else I'm hearing about. Like, I didn't hear this kind of outcry here. Is there a specific, cultural impact that this has in Germany that it wouldn't have, say, in the States or in Asia or somewhere else? Or are we just not hearing about, you know, other countries or other places that aren't happy about this stuff either?
Well, I think there is a cultural difference. There is more of an emphasis on privacy. There's more sensitivity to it there. Although in the United States, they're still investigating this Google Street View Wi-Fi collection thing. So something could still spring out of that. But we in the United States have a little more of a hands-off sort of thing. If you're on a public street, you can do whatever you want, right? We're not going to stop you.
Wasn't it Germany also found out about the whole Wi-Fi sniffing thing?
Yeah,
they're the
ones
place?
Who discovered that. You're right.
Yeah, so maybe they got a thing against Google. Who knows? But, I mean, doesn't this make anybody else a little bit more suspicious about this 2%? Like, isn't that, like, what are you hiding kind of thing if it's only 2%?
2.8%.
Okay, 2.8%.
Well, it's funny how BBC, what thousands of Germans opt out of Google Street View, made it sound like everybody was doing it. And then, of course, the Register headline was, Google points out hardly anyone opts out. Only 2.8%.
Does that make you suspicious at all about the people
who are hiding? 2% of any large population is a reasonably large number of people. And so if you took, 2% of the American population, you could say, well, it's just 2%, but it represents hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who are making a stand or making a big deal out of it. And we always, you know, we cover news stories like, 300 people marched on Washington today and they said this and that and the other thing. And we give that a lot of credence. I don't know. It seems like this should get as much news as anything else. And for whatever reason, they feel strongly about it. And it's probably okay that it gets covered. I'm sure, you know, Google wants to sort of cover that up and say, well, you know, it's not that big a deal. It's a tiny percentage, especially a company that deals in so many large numbers. This probably seems like nothing to them. But they kind of have to be careful in cases like this not to tick off the rest of Germany, in my opinion.
Millions of Germans have nothing to hide. Mm. Well, 1,800 can sound like a pretty big number if you're losing your job. Nokia announced in their earnings call yesterday that they'll be cutting 1,800 jobs. Now, that's out of, what, 128,000 people, something like that?
Yeah, the numbers are...
According to Google, that's nobody. No, I'm just kidding.
Now, the numbers for Nokia, they have like hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, or like I think nearly 200,000 people employed. So this is not... I mean, it's not a big deal. This is 1,800 jobs we're talking about. I think the weirdest spin on this is that Nokia actually made money and they still cut people.
Yeah, sales were up 2%. They had a net profit of 529 million euros. Whereas the last update, the last quarter, they had lost money. So things are turning around. You know, Nokia's making money. Sales are up. Let's fire people.
Well, they're mostly up in, overseas. They're not so much here. And I know that Nokia, while making a huge splash in the mid-90s in the States, has not been as big a player as others have been. And certainly since the smartphone thing sort of kicked off and everybody's got their own phone to throw out there, Nokia has been slow to penetrate this market. But from what I hear from my Finnish friends, Nokia is all over the place. I don't know why I quoted that, but yes, my Finnish friends say Nokia is everywhere.
Because they're actually Swedish
successful.
And you're insulting them.
Maybe. I know a couple of Finns and they claim Nokia is huge in the territories where where they thrive. So, 1,800 jobs. I don't know if this article went on to say, but is it jobs in worldwide they're talking about? Kind of a smattering?
Yeah, it's worldwide. Okay. It's not concentrated in any single division. It's efficiencies that they have found. And other efficiencies they've found, they've announced plans to make their Qt framework the only software development platform. They're also going to support HTML5. So trying to simplify development there, saying, look, you'll develop in the Qt framework or you make something in HTML5. It's going to work on Symbian. It's going to work on Mego. And we're going to continue to have both of these. We're going to simplify the versioning system for Symbian. There's some good news for developers here, at least if you're confused by all of the different options. I guess it's bad news if you're a developer and you lose one of the options you liked.
You could also argue that it's an interesting place to be when you're Nokia. You kind of have a lot of innovation happening at your company, and then everyone else kind of takes it and makes it their own and makes it better. And I'm reminded of like the Nokia N-Gage was supposed to be this gaming revolution, portable gaming. You could play your friends. You could control a game pretty well with the way this thing was laid out and the way it had buttons and stuff. It was supposed to be this revolutionary device, and it got killed and nobody wanted it and everybody poo-pooed on cell phone games. And now Apple's come along with their App Store and they've said, no, look, here's a way that a lot of people buy a lot of games and a lot of people make a lot of money at this and it'll become a huge hit for both the iPad and the iPhone. That has to drive you crazy to be that company.
Apple didn't start by making the way you load games be to take out the battery.
Well, don't forget, though, that Nokia also had their whole line of tablets when nobody else was making them. Remember those? I remember seeing those on airplanes. I'm like,
huge enthusiasts of that the N-series tablets, including the N900.
So they must be going crazy for lots of reasons. So their phones aren't successful here. They had tablets before they were popular, and they actually had a decent operating system for a while, and they still, by the way, this is something that gets lost all the time. They still have, like, what, half the world market share, or something like 40%? So they're not doing that
badly. They're still number one, far and away.
Yeah. It's just like people think they're nothing because their United States presence isn't as big as it could be.
Another company that a lot of folks think are struggling, which are not struggling, another company that is struggling, AT&T. They tripled their profits. No crying for the AT&T. They're going to lose iPhone exclusivity. All of those people complaining about their reliability, they're going to quit subscribe. No. AT&T profits tripled. They got a favorable tax settlement on the sale of a business software unit to IBM. The only thing that was negative in the report was their sales of the iPhone, which were still a record, 5.2 million iPhones in Q3, but most were upgrades. And for the first time, they only had 24% of their iPhone sales be new customers. That's an all-time low for that percentage. So not bringing people into the AT&T tent anymore with the iPhone, which kind of means, you know what, they probably don't care that it's going to Verizon because they're not getting that many new people because of the iPhone anymore anyway.
Well, do you think, though, like I has suggested this before the show today, that this may be directly tied to an announcement pending from Verizon that users are holding back, especially the existing users, which is where we're really showing the biggest drop here. Are they just sort of like, I've waited 4 years and I still been holding on to Verizon for dear life, and now I finally can get my iPhone there. Why switch now? It seems like that might have something to do with it.
Yeah, plus the rumor cycle really heated up in that quarter. I mean, recently we've gotten good news, I think, or good news if you're one of you on Verizon. I think the Wall Street Journal even talked about Verizon getting the iPhone finally. But I mean, the other thing is there's a lot more options with smartphones than there used to be. There's all these Android stuff. And I don't know if the reason why they're losing subscriptions and all, somebody just entered the room, so I need to step away.
Okay. No problem. That was a point well made. AT&T clocked up 2.6 million net new wireless subscribers. So because, like you're saying, there's other smartphone folks, there's other smartphones out there to choose from. There's a bunch of Windows Phone 7s hitting right now. There's you know, WebOS, tons of Android phones. AT&T's not having a problem signing up new subscribers. It's just the iPhone isn't the thing anymore. They've gone through four generations of it.
It's also not the only thing that is holding you back from leaving Verizon anymore, because what happens is you love Verizon as a carrier, but you really want that iPhone. But then in walks Google and Motorola and everybody with their Android phones, and they go, oh, you're saying I can do, we're talking about Joe, general customer here. You're saying I can do all this touchscreen stuff and all this video and web and everything else that the iPhone does in roughly the same package, and I can stay here? And they say, yep. And they say, awesome. And that's, I think that is a huge part of the success of the Droid platform in general, but I also think it is a kick in the butt to this AT&T exclusivity that Apple's had for so long.
All right. Does anyone else think it's interesting that Verizon was pretty much hammering AT&T with those map ads, and they still did really well?
Yeah, because I don't think people care about that. They see that as name-calling. It doesn't really work that well in politics either. Why would it work in carrier wars? Most people are picking a phone and most people are staying with the carrier they have, either because they're locked into a contract or they just don't want to bother going to somewhere else. It's really actually difficult because of the contract system to get someone to change carriers. It's almost as bad as trying to get somebody to change cigarette brands. You know, there's just this kind of addiction to what you've had because everything is so complicated and you have to learn a whole new system of fees and everything. So yeah, I think that kind of stuff, they have to hammer it really hard because the few people they are going to chisel away, they really have to hit hard to get them. Let's take a break and thank our sponsors, Ford, makers of Ford Voice Activated Sync. They are the folks that allow you to drive truly hands-free. A lot of distractions on the road these days, and not the distractions that are on the road. Not the person driving next to you who's on the phone with the phone in their hand, weaving all over the place. That's one distraction. You don't want to be that person. So if you have voice-activated sync, you don't have to be that person, and yet you don't have to deny yourself communication. If you're running late or if you need to coordinate something, send off a text message, you do it all hands-free. You just talk to the car, and the car sends the text message to you, or it reads a text message to you. Bluetooth connection to your cell phone handles that. You can listen to your podcast, your audiobooks, change it all on the fly just by talking, and true hands-free turn-by-turn directions. It'll speak the directions to you, so you don't have to look at a map, and you don't even have to wait to have somebody in the car next to you tell you, like, oh, turn left up here. Car does that for you. 911 assist, really good. If those airbags deploy, automatically calls 911 for you. That could actually be very important in an unfortunate situation. Sync is available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. So check it out at SyncMyRidePodcast.com, and we thank them for their support. Apple, in a couple of hot broths today, Trying to coin a new metaphor here.
I like it.
Yeah. The Mac App Store is apparently not good news for Java. Apple upgraded the Java runtime machine, the thing that executes Java programs on Snow Leopard today, and put out a note saying they are deprecating Java and they will continue to support it for Snow Leopard. But as of this release, Apple produced runtime will not be maintained at the same level and may be removed from future versions of Mac OS X. Java runtime shipping in Mac OS X Snow Leopard and Mac OS X Leopard will continue to be supported through the support cycles, but that may be it. They may not give you Java and OS X Lion.
So this is, it's basically now come down to, and this should be clarified too for people who maybe are thinking, Apple's going to stop letting Java run on their machines. That isn't what they're saying. They're just not going to include a build of Java in their OS and support it as an OS feature. They'll still allow it down the road, I hope and presume, to be installed by anybody who wants to install it, just like they do now with Flash or Silverlight or whatever. It's just now sort of a more third-party application that they don't really want to bundle anymore.
This is no different than Windows. Windows doesn't come with a Java runtime normally. A lot of manufacturers will pre-install it for you as part of their OEM installation. But when there was a big dispute back, I remember in the early part of the decade when Microsoft decided not to include the JRE on the Windows disk. So, you know, this is not that big of a deal. The knock-on issue here that you have to pay attention to is that the new Mac App Store, not the iPhone App Store, the Mac App Store has guidelines. This is the one coming out 90 days to Snow Leopard. Apps that use deprecated or optionally installed technologies will be rejected. For example, Java or Rosetta. So you can't code your app in Java and have it be in the Mac App Store. You can still have a Java app installed on OS X. It just means that you have to actually download the Java runtime in the future, possibly, and you have to go find the app just the way you find apps today. It's not going in that App Store. There's a lot of limitations to that App Store.
That makes a lot of sense because Apple, they don't like it when people develop applications for their iPhone first on Android or some other cross-platform thing. Java allowed you to create an application that would be cross-platform. And if you ever use a Java application, you notice that the UI can break all kinds of UI rules that Apple will probably set in the Mac App Store. So I think this is probably going to just create a much more unified-looking bunch of apps that come out of the App Store, just like how they got rid of that whole Adobe layer when they wanted to do that with the iPhone.
Yeah, that's true. The more I get my head around this App Store idea, the more I'm actually kind of coming around to liking it. And the reason I kind of like it is I think it's an opportunity for a lot of utility-based apps that are a little trickier to find online coming out in a unified way that's inexpensive and quick and easy for me to get and maintain and update. Whereas I can still go out there and pick and choose whatever I want from the App Store that we've called the internet for the last 20 years. So if Apple was saying we're walling off this garden and the only way you're going to get applications on your Mac is through our App Store, I'd have a problem with that. And since they're not doing that, I feel pretty good about this direction. It is interesting, however, that they are limiting the tools to which you could use to throw together, apps to put on the store, like you said, like they did with the iPhone. I don't know what that means. I mean, Java hasn't been on my radar for a long time, so I'm not that chuffed about Java going away as a,
Do you use Levelator?
I don't, but IaaS does. So tell us what you do without Java, IaaS, without Levelator.
I'll just install it myself or just not use 10.7. I mean, I don't have to really worry about it. Plus, it's still cross-platform. So if I need to, I'll just use a Windows machine or a Windows VirtualBox. So, I mean, you can always get it. I mean, the people who want to use Java, they'll be able to get it. All right. Yeah. This just means the way Apple's working with the whole Mac App Store, it's just taking computers to a whole consumer electronics level that us nerds don't like. But I wouldn't worry about it.
Is Minecraft Java? A bunch of people in the chat room are asking, and I think it might be.
That's a good question. I'm not sure about that. The best line in here, though, is somebody says, so how long before they jailbreak Lion, which is kind of interesting. I think there's a bit of a conspiracy theory going around.
I think that's why you're not understanding. There's no jailbreak necessary here. You can install Java yourself. Right. It's just not going to be built in, which is the nice thing about OS X is you don't have to go install Java like you do with Windows.
I just think there's a conspiracy boiling out there that isn't not from me. I don't feel this way at all, but I think there's a conspiracy boiling, and some people in the chat room seem to agree that these are stepping stones to them having more ultra control over the environment. And I don't know if I see it that way. I think they saw the strengths of the App Store on the phone and thought, you know what? What if we translate that to a Mac experience and beef up Mac sales because of it? And we don't have to control everything, but we provide this cool way to do it. I mean, again, the jury's out. We'll have to see it. But to see it automatically as a step toward, you know, totalitarian control over your computer, I think is probably overstating.
Also, a note here, if you've installed FaceTime for the Mac, you might want to change your Apple password, because when you log into FaceTime, it no longer requires you to put your login in every time you load FaceTime. It automatically logs you in. Isn't that nice? That also means anybody who's sitting at your computer can log into your FaceTime and change your password, for which will effectively change your password for all your accounts, like your iTunes account, for instance. It's not a gaping security hole. In fact, I think Ars Technica called it a slack-jawed security hole. Somebody has to be at your computer. Your computer has to not be password protected, which OS X isn't by default. And they have to think to open up FaceTime, and then they can change the password to your iTunes account and lock you out and use it for you. But those things aren't going to happen in large numbers. Still a security hole, and probably going to make me think twice about using FaceTime because I don't want someone to have that access.
Yeah, how quick do we think they'll patch this up? I don't think anybody's really heard any definite word, and Apple doesn't really say things about stuff like this, but I'll bet we see something pretty quick that'll patch up this beta. And it is beta, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It is a beta, and some folks are saying they've already got a patch out for it, so we'll have to confirm that. I don't see an update about that yet, but maybe by the time you're listening to this, there's already a patch for it. It shouldn't be that hard to fix.
There was a hole like this with Safari, where Safari would automatically open safe files, and they patched that within like a day. So for this kind of ridiculous mistake, this will be fixed.
Yeah, it doesn't reveal your account information. It just gives somebody a chance to change it, and then they would know it.
But the fact that it's attached to an iTunes account potentially means that you're giving away the ability to control your credit card. That's really where the problem is.
Exactly. The Associated Press, they love to misunderstand how the internet works, and their latest venture doesn't do that. In fact, it's not a bad idea. Here's what they're talking about. They want to create a clearinghouse for news stories. It would be something that the Associated Press would start by spinning it off into a separate company, and then it would be open to any newspaper to be able to put out their news stories for licensing. So if I want to take a story from the Minneapolis Star Tribune and run it on my site, I'd be able to go to this new company and get a license for it. It'd be sort of, they're calling it the ASCAP of news. It's not a bad idea, right? It's a way for me to easily find news stories and reprint them with permission. The problem is the AP in the past has shown a fundamental misunderstanding of fair use and has said they would charge things for as much as a sentence of quoting. So this could be used for bad, which is to go around and try to charge people who quote a news story, who quote one line out of an AP story, and say, oh, you got to pay for a license for that now.
I really hope they don't do that, because this seems like a service or a plan that could really benefit smaller news outlets, smaller papers, more local kinds of content that may need to grab onto these headlines and pull stuff from there and do it in a legal way that benefits the AP, it benefits them. So I really hope that they can separate what is truly fair use and what is, you know, needs to be stuff.
They have not shown any evidence that they can do that this date.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, but I don't know. I kind of have high hopes for this, but everything smells like an app store to me. Do you get any of that from this?
It's a big buzzword. It's like the we have an HD mouse out there, which basically means it has a really good laser, but everybody throws HD. App store is kind of invading everyone's consciousness. Everyone's thinking about things as an app, app store is successful. Let's do everything that way.
Yeah. So if I came to you and said, check out this sweet blog post I did, and half of it was an AP story, would you, as a representative of the AP, want to go after me and get some cash out of my pocket?
Of course I would. I mean, let's be serious about this. They're kind of like the music industry was a couple of years ago. The music industry didn't understand anything. It took them years to figure out that no DRM and licensing stuff and letting it be free was a good idea. The AP is just a little bit behind.
They're also they're trying to DRM news, by the way. That was one part of this that I didn't mention.
I figured they can do that with Pig Latin, because I would totally be lost, you know? If the New York Times was in Pig Latin, I would not be able to understand it.
All right, let's take a moment to thank our other sponsor, Slingbox. Let's say you were wanting to, I don't know, subscribe to pay-per-view, like I'm going to do with BlizzCon this weekend, but you didn't want to waste it because you're going to have to go on Saturday to visit your father-in-law because it's his birthday, but you want to be able to watch the BlizzCon. Slingbox can solve that for you. You can watch your home television on your phone, on your laptop, wherever you go. Any of the TV you get at home, you can get over the internet wherever you are. All you do is you go and you buy a Slingbox, you plug it into the internet, you plug it into your television, you install the app on whatever device you want to watch it on, and you go wherever you want, as far as you want, wherever you've got an internet connection. You could be in China for all they care, and you can watch your home television. No restrictions, no geolocating, none of that kind of stuff. Check it out at slingbox.com/twit or head into a Best Buy and have them give you a demonstration for it. All right, I believe, is that, yes, time for the news, Hughes. CEO Reed Hastings had a few interesting comments during his earnings call yesterday. He called Netflix primarily a streaming company that also offers DVD by mail. He indicated a streaming-only plan could come to the U.S. in the fourth quarter of this year and noted that eventually DVDs might require a premium charge. So that, you know, it's kind of a little flip-flop there. You pay for a streaming plan and then add DVDs on top of that. Also said Netflix plans to expand beyond North America in 2011. Good news for you UK folks and Australians and Hong Kong and all the other countries that aren't the US and Canada.
Pirates Parties International wants to launch a file-sharing site. Where would you launch a site? Put the site in space. The plan is by putting the site in space, the Pirates Party site would be free of laws. This idea is so crazy, it might just work.
Or they might not be able to. They couldn't even afford to buy Sealand. How are they going to be able to afford to put it in space?
This is the Pirates Party. This isn't just the Pirate Bay. This is more than Pirate Bay.
Crazy. Nintendo is doing what it does best. They're repackaging old stuff. The Wii will be red in honor of Mario's 25th birthday and will come with a new Super Mario Brothers, the game, not a third Mario brother, which is really unfortunate. There you go.
I like that joke.
Iaz wrote that joke.
It's almost as if Iaz wrote that joke.
Yeah. Almost. I don't know.
And a redesigned Wii controller that has Motion Plus built in, which is about time. The redesigned Wii controller will also be on sale separately. The DSi XL will also get a red paint job for the Mario anniversary. The bundles are coming November 7th, so save money now.
Ah, good. A commie Wii. Couldn't wait. Mm-hmm. Mike Vernal of Facebook posted today that the company takes the sharing of user IDs very seriously and is developing an encryption scheme to prevent the accidental transmission of the UID number. But he also indicated Facebook would like to fix the web, too. He wrote, quote, "The underlying issue of data sharing via HTTP headers is a web-wide problem. We look forward to working with the web standards community and browser vendors over the coming months to help address this issue. We will fix you, web."
Yes.
it's kind of imposing. Like, you know what the problem is? The web. Let's change HTTP. Do you want Facebook doing that? Maybe. They're smart guys.
Let's do it. That means half a billion. In news that'll excite about three of you, Opera 11 Alpha has been released on OS 10, Windows, and Linux. So what's new about this version of Opera? It'll be able to support a new technology called, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, extensions?
Yeah.
If you use Chrome or Firefox or even Safari, you've probably heard of extensions. Is this going to bring people to Opera? Probably not.
If you know Jennifer Lopez, you've also heard of extensions.
Okay, man. That was terrible. That was worse than my joke.
It was. It was pretty bad. So thanks for equalizing everything. That was perfect. Sony Corporation has shipped 1 million units, or at least they say they have, of the new Move motion controller for the PlayStation 3 in North America and Latin America during the product's first 30 days on the market. I am one of those people. Sony hopes it will give the gaming market a boost during the holiday shopping season. We'll see. Games so far have been really lackluster, so
yeah,
they need to kick it up a notch.
Something
in games.
Needs to happen.
They can do that. Yeah,
I have a question for you. When is 4G not really 4G? Technically, right now, nothing is 4G. The International Telecommunication Union, or ITU, decides who gets to call themselves 4G officially. They took a significant step towards approving LTE Advanced and the Wireless MAN Advanced portion of WiMAX IEEE 802.16m. The official votes are going to come later for those two technologies, but even so, the LTE and WiMAX that we are familiar with on the market right now are not still going to be technically called 4G. You can call them 4G in your marketing all you want, but they're not officially 4G. For them to become 4G, the implementations will have to start using orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, or OFDM, and they'll need to support peak download speeds of 100 megabits per second.
Wow.
Google has reached an agreement to build its first ultra-high-speed broadband network near Stanford University, the search giant announced on Thursday. The agreement with Stanford means the university's residential subdivision will be the first place to test internet speeds of up to 1 gigabit per second, more than 100 times faster than the typical broadband connection in the U.S. The plan is to break ground early next year.
Oh, I want that so bad.
1 gigabit. Wow. The amount of file sharing.
It's the future. The future now, man.
So wait a minute. Let me get this right. Google, created by two students from Stanford, did a nationwide search to figure out where should we start this amazing new fiber, and then decided, oh, for the residential section for our buddies at Stanford.
Are you saying they're biased?
No.
They wouldn't be biased.
No, not at all.
All right. Let's finish up. Chat room pointed out that ABC, CBS, and NBC have all announced they're blocking TV programming for Google TV. Full-length episodes of shows like The Office, Crime Scene Investigation, and Modern Family cannot be viewed on Google TV.
So, unless you change the browser.
That's a rocky start for the service. Yeah, you can go in and change the Chrome ID to generic, right, and then it doesn't get blocked anymore. But, my Logitech review unit just started. Not review unit, but like it's called the review. That's the brand name. It just started. It shipped. I'll be getting it in a couple of days.
Well, it makes sense to me because this stuff, you know, those guys are all tied into Hulu in a big way right now, and they're making careful gestures in the Hulu way, and they don't even really like doing that. So some other new thing comes along and says IPTV. I mean, these networks aren't going to jump at every little chance they get for that. They should be, but they won't.
Careful with your gestures. Yeah, this is not an auspicious start for the box that's supposed to make it easy for you to get everything. Google's got a lot of work to do. That's everybody but Fox, essentially, in the United States. On to the calendar, Samsung has come clean with Galaxy S Froyo upgrade dates. If you own a Fascinate, Captivate, Try Not to Hate, Love Your Mate, or any of the other Samsung Galaxy S variations, you will, by the end of November, have Android 2.2. It's going to come first to the UK early November. It'll start hitting all the Sammies there, and then all the rest of them, the Vibrant and all of them, by the end of November. Today is the anniversary of the release officially into the consumer marketplace of Windows 7.
Yay!
See, when we did that for Vista the first year, we didn't get the yays like that.
No. I like Windows 7. My gaming box purrs. It's had Vista before. It doesn't anymore. Things are better for me. I think 7 is a great product from Microsoft's OS division, and I think we should celebrate the fact that it's existed for a year. It seems like it was yesterday, but 1 year goes fast.
They grow so fast.
Windows 7, when Microsoft, of course, throwing out the numbers, they've sold more than 240 million copies. People have opened the start menu 14 trillion times. How do they know? See, that's tantamount to admitting they're tracking all of us.
Ooh, creepy.
Yeah. Used Aero Snap 150 million times. How do they know? That's kind of spooky. But anyway, happy birthday to Microsoft Windows 7. And it's also the eve of the death of Windows XP. As of tomorrow, OEMs will not be allowed to ship any XP machine, either pre-installed or with a disc in the box, after tomorrow. So most manufacturers have stopped making XP machines available for order because they wanted to make sure they didn't ship any after the deadline. But October 22nd is the last day for machines to ship with XP installed.
Whoa. That's a great thing because 7 is good. It's celebrating its first birthday, like we just said, and it should be on more PCs than XP right now.
Absolutely.
XP is just, it's long in the tooth. It's got to go.
All right, on to the voicemails, 260-TNT Show. Our first caller has a unique Facebook privacy concern.
Yeah, hey guys, I was just listening to one of the last shows and trying to catch up here, and Becky Worley was talking about the worst case scenario with Facebook privacy and linking things together for your identity, and you know, searching breast cancer and risk assessments for insurance companies. Well, I'm a paramedic in California, and I do a lot of searching online for different things medically related. So I guess I'm in really big trouble. Thank you, guys. Love the show. Ryan from Huntington Beach.
I don't know, though. If he does so many different weird searches, maybe the people would just get overwhelmed and think, okay, it's obviously not his personal problem. He couldn't have too many problems or he'd be dead.
Well, I'm guessing it's a lot of his searches is based on stuff he's seeing in his everyday experience with his job. So if he sees some crazy situation with some lady they found or whatever, he's going to go not only check it out for just maybe pure curiosity, but he's going to check it out for professional reasons. And if there comes a day where all his searches come to light and they're not seen in the proper context, I could see why he would maybe worry a little bit. That is a lot of data.
I think the data would show that he's a paramedic, though, just because of the variation.
You're probably right. Yeah.
Our next caller tells a heartwarming story about Netflix.
Hey, TNT. Jeff from Corpus Christi. Following up on your story on Netflix, recently I received an email from Netflix saying that my movie that I was going to get next was too far away, so they were going to send me two in advance. Is this an amazing company or what? So I love the show. By the way, our 4G in Corpus Christi, amazing.
Well, I like these customer satisfaction stories from time to time where people, we always get people complaining like, this company did this horrible thing to me. This company did that horrible thing to me. It's nice to have ones like, this company did this nice thing for me.
Isn't that usually Netflix, though, that has the positive stuff?
That's true, it is.
Yeah, I guess so.
I actually have a very unique experience with Netflix. I've had the occasional disc come shattered and have to send it back and get another one or, you know, little things like that. And they're always real responsive and quick, and they don't ask twice, and, you know, you just do it. It's like they trust everybody to do the right thing. I had a situation where I thought I wasn't delivered a disc. It was a Blu-ray, in fact. And I was 100% sure I hadn't gotten it. And I went to the site, said, never received it. They said, no problem, new one on its way. Got there the next day. I live real close to a hub. And then a couple days later, I find the other disc. It had gotten here. One of my kids got a hold of it. I never knew about it, and there it was. So I felt kind of bad, right? So I got two copies of this disc. Technically, I could keep one. I wasn't going to, though, because it was Pirates of the Caribbean 3, and that movie was terrible. So what I did instead is I got online and I tried to find a way to tell them this. And they, you know, I basically sent them a message that, hey, I was mistaken. I had both. And they said, no problem. Just stick them in the mail. We're not going to interrupt your service. We still have a third disc coming. I mean, they're just so easy to work with on this stuff that you wonder if that isn't the main reason they succeeded so much. Because if they were a company that got all nervous about, oh, what if he's really broken that disc? What if that shatter was his fault? What if the dog ate it? You know, they're not being truthful to us. They could get really picky about presenting proof and making sure that if, you know, whatever I sent back to him was the way I said it was. So can people game that? Yeah. But I, for one, really appreciate the fact that they are willing to trust their consumers. Yeah. And it really pays off for them, I think.
Very similar to Zappos. So we can expect that Netflix will be giving you a refund for the hour that their streaming service was down today.
Oh, yeah. It was down. It went down right while I was in the middle of watching an old British comedy, and it died.
You should demand money. Threaten to sue. That is the American way. All right. Paul wrote into our email address, tnt@twit.tv, said, I don't know if I was seeing things right on my Roku personal channels, but it seems that this morning the Hulu Plus channel magically appeared on my channel selection. I know I didn't add it myself. So how did Roku know I wanted Hulu? I was hoping to find out from other people if this was really just something that Roku did with all U.S. sold Rokus or if I was just singled out for special treatment. Well, we have a Hulu icon on our Roku here at the Twit Cottage. You can't use it. You can't go into it yet. It just says coming soon. So I think it's probably just being rolled out as a default icon the way MLB was, the way Netflix is when you buy it and turn it on for the first time. And just in time.
How did Roku know? Your Roku is hooked up to the internet. It knows.
That's how it does.
Don't worry about it.
Also, Hulu is apparently considering cutting the price of their service for Hulu Plus from $10 a month to $5 a month. So just, good idea. Just in time. I don't know.
I hadn't heard that. That's awesome. Yeah. I hope that happens because that's a big deal for me. I mean, the fact that they still have ads in there and they were asking for 10. And
wait,
I know it's
minute.
Nitpicky and stuff, but $5, that's great.
Maybe yeah. they anchored the price in our brains as 10 and we're like, that's too expensive. So like, yeah. we'll lower it to 5.
It's just a double switch.
Evil plan complete.
All right, Scott, you got the next one?
I sure do. Let me go ahead and read that. TNT. Is that the right one?
No, it's no. It's from Scott, but not you. Different Scott.
Google Docs is doing its fun thing. Here we go. Here we go. Just a thought. But one thing that may be good about the idea of the Mac App Store is that as a customer, I can trust the process of buying an application for the computer more in an app, Mac Store, App Store. I'm reading this really well so far. In the past, when I have purchased a program from a small developer, they normally don't process my credit card directly and send me to some other site to process the payment, like, you know, things like PayPal and so on. Once the payment is processed, the site then sends the payment info back to the developer. Finally, the developer sends me the activation key. There are a lot of places this can break down, and this payment center, which has my email and can spam me with great offers for Windows software, even though I don't do Windows. As a customer, I have more trust in Apple than these random payment processing sites. That's an interesting point, and I think I kind of know. I've been through some of the stuff he's talking about. There are apps like Transmit for the Mac, for example. Great FTP program, probably the best. Love that thing, but there was this big pause between when I bought it and when I got my key, and I didn't recognize the processor, and I wasn't sure if I was ever going to hear from these guys again. So I think it's going to be developers like that that jump on this and really succeed in that ecosystem, I hope.
I have a thought. In fact, I have a website for you, a website link that you can use right now. You don't have to wait for the Mac Store at all. You can start using it today. It's full of great apps for things like web browsing, video players, instant messaging, application management, email, DVD ripping, RSS management, podcasting, playback, video playback, CD/DVD burning, and the list goes on. Great privacy applications, and you won't have any problems with your credit card authorization, and you can 100% trust that they will not take your credit card information and steal it. Sound good?
Oh my gosh, yes.
OpenSourceMac.org.
Tell me more, Tom.
It's a link to a bunch of open source programs that are absolutely free.
All right. You got me. Yeah. You sold me.
So there you go. I mean, that's just one of those things. Yeah, I know. It's nice that Apple's going to be a trusted source for all kinds of applications. So, you know, that's cool. But, you know, I just don't think you have to limit yourself to any one source, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. So let's say the guys at Transmit decide to do the App Store. I assume they'll still be able to do their own thing if they want. Whereas, like, okay, so on the App Store for your iPhone and stuff, that's a problem because the developer's like, I wish I could just put it on my site. I don't have a problem. I pay for all my processing in-house. I don't have a problem with this, but okay, I guess we'll have to do it under these rules. In this scenario, it's a little bit different. Can these developers jump on to potentially this new revenue stream but keep their old processes in place?
Yeah.
You have to check the terms of the deal when you put an application in there. I would imagine they're probably going to look for exclusive content. But I do you think they would let them do it on both ways? It just seems like it doesn't seem Apple's way.
It's like comparing apples and oranges.
Which you can do now.
Yeah, you can scientifically do it.
I learned that from you.
You need an autoclave, I think. But yeah. All right. Thanks, you guys. Scott Johnson, I will talk to you tomorrow morning. We'll be doing the BlizzCon coverage.
Yep, doing some BlizzCon coverage. Hoping to have some people there who can talk to us live, but really looking forward to it. So everybody who can hear the sounds of our voices now, be there if you are at all interested in BlizzCon stuff. It's going to be fun.
And I, as Akhtar, this old nerd, going well?
It's going well. We had a cable TV fiasco the other day, but this time we succeeded. Everything works. Go to thisoldnerd.com. Watch the episode. Shows you how to cut cable TV using some combination of some cool stuff. Definitely check it out.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for hanging with us and watching the show. I know on the live show today we were a little late, but we're still good. It's still Tech News Today. You can watch us every day live at anywhere between 2:30 and 3 o'clock Pacific time at live.twit.tv. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. You can give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW, or find us on the web and get all the show notes at twit.tv/TNT. We'll see you tomorrow.